May it please the court. As the court is well familiar, an AHC decision in a case like this will be affirmed if it's authorized by law, supported by competent substantial evidence. Mandatory safeguards have not been violated. It's not clearly contrary to the reasonable expectations of the legislature. In this case, I would submit that sloppiness pays. The reason being, this whole case centers around the delivery term FOB manufacturer. The commission extracted that term from an unsigned delivery or document in this case. If VisionStream is held to be responsible for that delivery term, they are left with an unenforceable sales contract. To put it in another context, Your Honors, if we had a plea agreement in a criminal case with the defendant's name on it but not signed, could they be held to it? If we had a contract for the purchase of a car.
But they're not claiming you're bound by that model agreement. They're saying you didn't show you did anything else. You put that out on as your model agreement that governs generally and sets out the general terms and provisions. And as I understand it, indicate you didn't put on any evidence of any contrary terms in this case. Is that correct? And you introduced the model agreement.
Well, Your Honor, the agreement was introduced, but they can't be held to it because it's not enforceable. I mean, yes.
What in the record shows what the terms are? Because you're asking for an exemption, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what did you show you're entitled to it?
I can answer that. Your Honor, under the statute, the goods were shipped out of state. They had to be inspected upon delivery. There was testimony to that effect by the president of VisionStream. They had to be accepted, and at that point, the risk of loss would pass.
Opposing counsel argues that as soon as they were shipped, they were bought, basically, and the remedies were those you might have when you purchased something that didn't conform to what you expected, but that the risk of loss passed at that time and the contractual obligations attached at that time, and you simply had remedies if it was defective, but it wasn't as if you hadn't purchased it. Is that correct?
Well, I respectfully disagree with respondent on that point, Your Honor. I believe that under 400-20209 of the UCC, if it's shipped out, if there's no provision for delivery, then risk of loss does not pass until it's actually accepted by the other side if you have a merchant shipping, and that's the case here.
So are you telling me when you sell it, it's not sold? They don't have to return it and try to get their money back. They don't even have to pay for it until they see it and accept it. They don't owe you any money until they actually affirmatively say, yes, I like this, I want this. And that's your practice in doing business?
Well, as I said, I think sloppiness pays in this case for VisionStream. VisionStream has this delivery order or this contract that they can't enforce. It's not signed by either party. So if they went into court and tried to collect, could they collect under a quantum merit theory under the UCC? They can collect because these were specially constructed goods. There is a provision in the UCC that allows them to sue for that. But if you say to me, can they hold someone to the entire document that is not signed by anyone, I would submit no.
But I'm asking a different question. Is have they bought it as soon as it's sent to them?
I don't believe that that's a testimony in the case.
Okay.
It was specially constructed, but it came in pieces, and it had to be inspected and accepted at the site. So could they have been paid for it? Yes, if they had sued. But if you're saying to me, did the risk of loss pass when it was shipped? No. I don't believe so. It had to be inspected and accepted, and that's per the UCC.
And they could refuse it and refuse to pay as opposed to simply try to get their money back?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay. So what if there was a fire? Let's say it was on a truck, and the truck had an accident, and the goods were destroyed before they, reached Indiana. Who's responsible? Who would be the insurance company responsible for that?
Well, if you're asking me legally, I think that it would be on the buyer. Risk of loss had not passed.
When do you think title passes, counsel?
I think title passed at the point of acceptance, out of state. As I said, sloppiness pays in this case because this contract was not signed by anybody. It's not enforceable. So to hold them, to deny them the sales tax exemption is to say that we don't have a statute of frauds under the UCC. Because this term, the special delivery term, is part of this unsigned contract, which they can't use for any other purpose except to lose their exemption.
Is it evidence of your regular course of dealing?
Your Honor, I believe the testimony was that the goods had to be accepted at the site. The brief of respondent says, well, you didn't introduce any emails, you didn't bring in any customers. And my point is, they shipped it out of state. Is the point then that if you want to claim the exemption, you have to line up your customers, you have to introduce all your emails, because you don't have a signed contract here. So you have to bring in all this other evidence, which then I would imagine respondent would say, well, as to that particular sale where you have an email that shows that it agrees with what you say, we'll give you that one. But on the other ones, you don't have evidence because there's no proof.
But who's the burden? Who's the burden on the show? I mean, you may say it's sloppiness and this and that, but if you're trying to say there was a meeting of the minds that title didn't pass until it was accepted at the site, how do we know that's the case?
Well, Your Honor, we had testimony on that point from VisionStream. It's uncontroverted in this case that the items had to be accepted at the point of delivery.
But there's no evidence in this case that any other state attempted or did impose any sales or use tax on this item at all, did they?
No, that's correct, Your Honor.
So somebody should be responsible for tax. True?
That's true. I believe that there would be use tax in the states in which the items were delivered. I'm not disagreeing with you that there should be tax at some point, but the question is, did VisionStream prove its entitlement to an exemption? I believe that they did.
Now, the AHC disagrees with you, obviously, and they base their decision on several things, not only the director's regulations, but the UCC, the display agreement. All those different areas they find justify the fact that title must have passed in Missouri. Can you explain why you disagree?
Again, Your Honor, I disagree because we have a merchant shipping goods out of state under the UCC. Risk of loss and title are not supposed to pass until they're accepted by the buyer. And in this case, we had testimony.
What UCC provision are you relying on?
The provision is 400-2-5093, that the merchant must deliver to the destination for the risk of loss to pass.
And where do you disagree with the analysis of the AHC on the UCC provision?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The AHC interprets the UCC differently than you do. Well, tell me where their faulty analysis is.
Again, it all boils down to whether you accept that this display order is a valid contract. The UCC couldn't say that, so instead they then said, well, we're going to pluck out of this unsigned document this FOB manufacturer term and use that as our course of dealing.
Well, what are the terms? Are they written anyplace? Or were they orally discussed? If there were no terms, what terms are implied if no specific terms were agreed to?
Well, Your Honor, that takes me back to 400-25093, that the merchant has to deliver to the destination under the UCC. That's the gap filler term here. But I think, again, the testimony in the case, which was uncontroverted, was that these displays, which are in pieces and have to be assembled, had to be approved at the point of receipt.
And what happens if they weren't approved? What happens if they weren't approved? What if there was a problem with one of them?
Well, again, under the UCC, VisionStream would have the right to sue, but they could not.
Well, right to sue, but you don't need to sue if you haven't bought anything. You're saying it's not.
We don't have a contract. That's why I was saying, Your Honor, sloppiness benefits them in this case because they don't have they can't put in that display order and say, well, we're suing based on this. It's unsigned by both parties. So what court, if this court was sitting in the circuit court, how would you enforce that?
Who introduced that? That, you know, the contract with the FOB terminology on it?
Who introduced it into the record?
Who introduced it into the record?
I think there's a dispute on it.
It says in the briefs that you did. It was your.
I'll assume that the counsel for the trial counsel for appellant put it in there.
So they must have thought.
I honestly don't know what purpose, except what does it show? It's something, but it doesn't show a contract. That's the problem here.
Well, that's what I meant, because the AHC chose to look at it to establish the, and use the FOB terminology to establish.
They did, but it's not enforceable. That's the problem.
Right.
It's not a contract.
But how
do you have any obligation? Since you offered the evidence, are you bound by the evidence you're offering? Why would you put this paper in there if there's no, if you say it has no meaning?
Your Honor, I can't explain that except that it is part of the complete course of dealing, I guess you could say. However, we had evidence and testimony that the items had to be accepted. So that contradicts.
Where did that come from? Where did that come from except for the UCC?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Where did that come from?
That came from the testimony of the president of Vision Stream that the goods had to be accepted. That's in my brief.
Wouldn't the finder of fact be entitled to believe all part or none of the testimony or evidence of any party?
I agree with that, Your Honor, but she didn't discredit the testimony. Instead, she pulled the delivery term out of the unsigned contract and relied on it to render the opinion.
Counsel, you're relying on that UCC provision you cited to me, but looking at it, I see it says where the contract authorizes or requires the seller to ship by carrier, if it does require him to deliver them at a particular destination and the goods are duly tendered while in the possession of the carrier, then the risk of loss passes when they're tendered. But you've just told us there was no written contract, so this doesn't have any application here.
Well, we don't have a contract.
So you don't
rely
on the UCC?
We have a sale of goods. Well, no, we have a sale of goods under the UCC.
Yeah, but it says you have to have a written contract that sets out when, where it has to be delivered, more risk of where they have to be tendered, then risk of loss passes at that point. But since you're saying the FOB terms that were introduced as the display order don't apply here and we're not shown to apply, then this provision doesn't apply, so we have nothing. How did you prove your exemption with nothing,
I understand what you're saying, but I disagree because we have invoices that are part of the record that show where the goods are being delivered to. And we also have testimony that they emailed back and forth as to the price and to the delivery point. That's the contract.
Thank you, counsel. You're out of time, but you'll have some time on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court.
You may proceed.
As the court is obviously aware, this case turns on factual credibility determinations made by the commissioner. The commissioner determined that the display evidence was the best evidence of the parties' intentions in their course of dealings.
But if it's not signed, how is it binding?
She said it's the best evidence of the intent. She's not saying in each case that it would bind or that there would be recourse for the taxpayer or somebody else, but she's saying in light of the paucity of evidence that's before me and in light of the equivocal testimony that I heard about it, this is, to me, the best thing that's come before me in this proceeding where the taxpayer bears the burden of proof.
Can you enlighten us at all about how the display order came to be introduced?
The display order is marked and labeled as Petitioner's Exhibit 10. So the petitioner, the taxpayer in this case, introduced it into evidence, and I believe it was introduced to show some of the terms about payment. And at the time it was introduced, if you look at the transcript on page 21, the former president, Gary Shasteen, who worked at this company from its inception through August of 2013, a period of about 10 years, he testified when asked about the petitioner's display order, this, quote, "This would be what we consider kind of our terms and agreement when I put something in front of somebody. If it was done on my behalf, it was done for a new client that kind of just spelled out payment schedule." So we have the petitioner, the taxpayer in this case, introducing this and saying, yes, this is, you know, this is our document.
Did petitioner's exhibit number 10 include a FOB manufacturer term?
Yes, Judge, it does include an FOB term. I believe what it says is FOB manufacturer in there.
Now, the conditions of payment, would the vendor get paid first before producing, or get paid half before producing, or would the vendor get paid on receipt at the site?
As I understand it, the vendor would wait for about 30 days after the delivery, which allowed invoices from other companies to come in, for example, for materials or other things that they had purchased that were going to be included in that transaction, and then after that time would bill. But that brings me to another point.
There's no down payment? There's no...
In some instances, if you look at the invoices, Judge, there were down payments. I know that one of these transactions in the record is for $250,000, and I recall that there was a $125,000 deposit, and that was not the only one that I saw where there were deposits made. It looked like in the majority they were not made, but in some instances there were. Opposing counsel talked about the UCC, and he talked about the inspection provision in the display order in the party's course of dealing. If you look at the UCC, section 400.2-513, it talks specifically there about inspection, and it says a place or method of inspection fixed by the parties is presumed to be exclusive, but unless otherwise expressly agreed, it does not postpone identification or shift the place for delivery or for passing the risk of loss. So what that's saying there is that even if you haven't inspected those goods, you may own them.
What about opposing counsel's argument that through emails or whatever, agreed that they would ship these materials to the particular location where the client wanted them, and that brings you within the 400-2.509?
If you look at 400-2.509, he cited to the third paragraph, but if you look at the fourth paragraph, it talks about how that section is subject to the contrary agreement to the parties. In other words, they could agree, as was evidenced here by the display order that the AHC found, that somewhere else would control.
So are you implying an agreement, even though there's nothing signed, some kind of mutuality of consent? I mean, talking about large sums of money and big product, I mean, something has to have been enforceable. Or if, for example, if they said, when they get it, $250,000 worth of product, they say, oh, we don't like it. And somehow, the Vision is going to try to collect on that. Vision Shoes is going to try to collect.
So I think these are two separate issues. He's trying to draw your attention away to the red herring, which is the enforceability of the contract. But we're talking about the sales taxability of these transactions at issue. And again, I would remind the court respectfully that this taxpayer was before the AHC in a refund proceeding. Under 621.050, the taxpayer bore the burden of proof. And the taxpayer was not only trying to make a point, but he's trying to claim an exemption. He's trying to claim that I'm entitled to a refund because I qualify for an exemption. And there are particular procedural burdens to that. You have to prove that you qualify for the exemption by showing that you fit the statutory language exactly, and you are only allowed to prevail if you have clear and unequivocal proof. And it says any doubts are resolved against the party claiming it. And that's exactly what this commissioner did here. She said, I find this testimony that you introduce this exhibit and you say, oh, we really like these parts, so these parts apply, but this part isn't so good for our point here, so we want to disavow ourselves of that. And then we say, well, we didn't really talk about it.
What about the director's regulation?
The director's regulation defines in commerce, and I don't see any way that these transactions meet what the definition of in commerce is in the director's regulation. And the regulation also...
The one about delivering, unless otherwise agreed, when you deliver it out of state, title passes out of state. 12 CSR 10-113.
Yes. So, Judge, if you look at that, I don't think you get to that part, because if you stop at A, so it's 12 CSR 10-113.200, paragraph 3, paragraph A.
Okay.
Title transfers when the seller completes its obligations regarding physical delivery of the property. So when these people had this $100,000 or $200,000 custom-made display and they loaded onto this contract carrier that was arranged by and or paid for by the purchasers, they were done. And when it got to the venue in Las Vegas where the trade show was, and the trade show directors are saying who can and cannot come off the dock and who can and cannot handle the materials and where they can and cannot place it, this seller, the taxpayer, said, I'm not willing to bear that risk of loss. And that was the course of dealing with all of its clients.
Of course, like you said, we're dealing with the taxes, not the transaction. Does Murphy versus Karen apply if the fact finder says this is it, he didn't meet the burden? Does Murphy versus Karen apply in these cases?
I don't know that it applies directly, but I do know that the AHC is entitled to deference for its factual determinations and particularly its credibility determinations. In this case, the testimony of the current president and the former president was either equivocal or it just didn't address the issues that were pertinent to resolving the case.
Well, that's your determination in briefing. I don't think that was a finding by the commission, was it?
The commission talked about their quote-unquote self-serving statements, and the commissioner did find on at least three pages that the display order was the best evidence of the party's intent as to when title passed, and she made that conclusion based on their testimony. If you look at their testimony and what they pleaded, in their second amended complaint before the commission, they pleaded Vision Stream and its customers intended for title and ownership of these exhibits to pass after the customers received, inspected, and accepted these exhibits in such states, which intention is evidenced by bills of lading, carriers' procedures, Vision Stream's own billing practices, and customers' understandings and expectations. So this is their pleading. This is not anything that we forced them to say. Then when you get to the hearing, you have their current CEO saying, well, the way we did our contracts was we would send an email with an attachment, with an estimate, and they would email back. And presumably that is their contract, but those are not admitted into evidence. So the commissioner, I don't know, probably was frustrated by this to some extent. I mean, these guys are talking about, you know, these customers send out RFPs and we respond, and all of these things together become the contract, but not a one of those was introduced into evidence. And these are, like I mentioned, these are purchases. We're talking, there are multiple purchases for $70,000 or greater. There's an $88,000 invoice in there, $125,000, $250,000. And their clients included sophisticated customers like GM, the brands for Colgate, Purina, Monsanto, Mallinckrodt, Citrix. So maybe you deal sometimes with unsophisticated customers who have unsophisticated purchasing requirements for their purposes.
Is that what A is in part intended to address? It says title transfer. When talking about title transfer, it says a recital by the seller and buyer regarding transfer of title is not the only evidence of when title passes. The key is the intent of the parties as evidenced by all relevant facts, including customer usage of trade.
Right.
And that's where the AHC relied upon the standard terms in the display order.
Right.
Okay.
Is there relevance to the fact that no tax was ever imposed in any other state, sales or use tax?
Yes and no. I think it's indicative of the fact that they thought this initially thought that these transactions were subject to sales tax. And then when their finances became poor and they filed for bankruptcy, you know, you have different people in there taking another look at how can we preserve the funds of this company.
But it's certainly a better case for an exemption if they had paid tax in some other state.
Right. If I believe that, I don't speak for the Director of Revenue in all parts, but I believe that if there is a vast difference between the taxpayer says, I'm not subject to your tax and I paid to somebody else versus I'm not subject to your tax and I didn't pay anybody. I think those are treated differently from the outset, frankly. The main thing that I wanted to draw the court's attention to was the fact that the testimony that was given was equivocal. Opposing counsel talked about it being uncontroverted. The department didn't have any, or the director didn't have any real duty to controvert it. What testimony was given was equivocal at best. And under those circumstances, the commissioner did not commit reversible error in finding that the title transferred in Missouri. No one else has any further questions for me.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Charles.
May it please the court. Again, I believe that the key in this case is when the seller completed the obligations of delivery. What is the point of the inspection in this case if that is not for title to pass.
And where does it say that it's not accepted until it's expected, until it's inspected and so forth?
How
do we know that it wasn't accepted until it was inspected?
Well, we have the equivocal testimony that respondent referred to by the president of VisionStream. But you have these companies that are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for displays, which are in pieces, shipped to a remote destination, and they're supposed to be on the hook to pay when it hasn't even been looked at yet.
Is this based on the display order terms or on emails or invoices, or what is it? You're saying it just makes common sense.
I'm saying, Your Honor, if you're looking at common sense and course of dealings, of course it has to be inspected and accepted and approved out of state for someone to be liable for it and for the title and risk of loss to pass.
VisionStream doesn't pay for the transportation. Delivery is taken at the time in Missouri, and then it's your trucks or whatever you use to bring it back to the home state. Why is that when the property transfers?
Your Honor, you mean when it goes to the carrier?
Yeah, when it goes to the carrier, it's paid for by the purchaser.
It can't, because these are custom-made goods and parts. They have to be inspected.
But under what? I mean, you're saying we shouldn't look at common and ordinary practice and custom here. We have to have a signed contract, except that you think we should infer that, because that's customary in the trade. So why isn't it fair to infer other terms also?
I understand, Your Honor. However, I pointed out to 400-25093, which says that if you have a merchant, the merchant has a higher burden. If a merchant is shipping goods, then the risk of loss doesn't pass until they're actually given to the buyer.
And that's the case here. What about the buyer paying for the transport? Does that change that?
I don't believe so. I don't believe it does in this case.
The merchant isn't shipping it. The buyer is shipping it. The merchant's delivering it to the shipper, who was paid for by the buyer. The shipping is the responsibility is on, at that point, I assume, the buyer.
Well, it's the merchant that is physically shipping them, though, to the buyer.
They're not paying for the shipping.
He's not paying for the shipping, but as their testimony transpired in the case, there had to be inspection. It isn't that we're shipping this and we're done with you. It's in a box in pieces and we're done with it. We don't care whether you inspect it or not. Instead, the testimony was it has to be inspected and accepted at the site. This is hundreds of thousands of dollars of displays that have to be accepted at the point of delivery.
To rule in your favor, do we have to find that the unsigned contract was not relevant evidence of your custom or usage of trade?
I would agree, Your Honor. I don't believe that it was relevant because it wasn't signed.
Do we have to find it? It couldn't be relevant evidence because clearly the commissioner relied on it.
Well, the commissioner did rely on it, but again, it was unsigned. That's why I said that sloppiness in this case.
No, I'm not saying it's not a binding contract. Can it not be relevant evidence of your custom or usage of trade?
I don't believe so because it wasn't.
Then why not?
Why not? Because they were only using the emails and bills of lading and invoices, and that's their actual usage.
Well, what about your client's testimony that, well, I would usually present this to show them how we usually did things? Isn't that kind of an indication that it was the backdrop against which the custom and usage against which all the individual transactions occurred?
Your Honor, I'll respectfully disagree and
sure.
say that I think that was his expectation. Again, sloppiness. His expectation was, gee, we're going to have all these terms that are in this display order, and then if he ever wants to enforce it, it's not signed.
But
so,
you offered it in evidence, and apparently the defendant did not, the respondent did not object. So you offered it in evidence, and when the evidence offered by you for some explanation, by your point, I know you didn't do the trial.
No, but, I know. Well, Your Honor, if you say to me, well, was it part of
what their expectation was, it was. Was it binding? Can you take the display term and then use it against the merchant in this case? I don't think you can. But if you say to me, isn't it part of the whole, I guess, deal? It was, except that nobody was bound by it. That's the problem. So for what it's worth, it's in the record, is my response.
And you put it in the record?
They put it in the record. I mean, as again, I think that was his expectation as to what he thought the term should be, but unfortunately they're not.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under submission.